And this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, here in the heartland, in the bunker, right here in north central Indiana.
Well, it's no longer the insurgent, and I'm no longer in northern Indiana. How about that? I'm in sunny California, back where I was for 40-some years before. Yeah, back again. How about that? Cool today here in California. Nice, though. Nice. It'll get just exactly the right temperature by noon. Well, we're going to start with something new this morning. We're starting in the morning. We're going to revert from the afternoon to the morning for a while and see how that goes, because number one, I'm a fresher cat man in the morning, and there's not near as much noise around the domicile here. Yeah, if you know what I mean. I see the demo crazies have introduced articles of impeachment against Trump. I think it's hilarious. I think the Democrats are operating in a very interesting fashion as they sort of go down in power and influence. But they're not going to disappear. They're going to get bigger because the non-whites and more so-called progressive thinking people are in the Democrat Party. And with the demographics as the way they are, the Democrat Party is not going to get smaller. It's going to get larger, and the dangerous parts of the Democrat Party are going to get even more dangerous as the old line, old fraudulent white people fade out of the picture. Now, I predicted a long time ago and suggested, of course everybody thinks I'm crazy, that the whites never should have given up the Democrat Party. I mean, the right-thinking whites. And if they're going to have any chance at all, they'd reinvade the Democrat Party and take it over. I mean, you'd have to have guile and ruthless activity, but there's no future in the Republican Party. If you're going to try to use a party, there's no future in it. You're better off right in the mosh pit battling the other side, you know? Yeah. But I know there's not going to be many people out there with that opinion. They're going to muddle along with the Republican Party. Say, well, there's a few good ones up there. They want to do right, but you've got to understand the pressure they're under. And blah, 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 ad nauseum, what we've heard for 40 years, man. 40 years at least. We've been hearing that crap from the Republican Party. Somehow, every time they turn around, they're reconvincing white working people that the Republican Party is their champion. Now they're doing it with Donald Trump. Well, he's not. And when they're spending $700 billion on armaments, guns, ships, and planes, instead of pouring money into the infrastructure of this country, they're on the wrong side. They're on the capitalista make money side, and the hell with the worker. And as they get more robots in, you're going to have even less jobs. So anyhow, that's the way it's going. But it's amazing how they can dupe so many white people. I guess it's simply by saying how rotten the other side is. Well, of course the other side's rotten. Of course, all political parties are rotten. All political parties are full of corruption. All over, anywhere in the world, always has been. That's why your daddy George Washington said we should stay away from political parties, period. As far as supporting democracy, there's no democracy going on here. I mean, you know, this country, the intelligentsia goes to war anytime they want. They expend as many troops as they want. They spend as much money on arms as they want and then claim the people are crying for it. Horse shit. The only way the people are crying for it is because they're lied to so badly and they're so dumbed down by a rotten educational system. Of course, the college system is absolutely, totally a brainwash operation from the word go, and these stupid people, upper middle class and middle class white people that save all their money to send their kids to college, you're sending them there to be ruined unless they're going for hard science. Social science and all that stuff is what's turning them into actual enemies of their own parents. Well, what's going on with poor Roy Moore? Roy Moore's got a problem. Now the Republican leaders are exploring a dramatic remedy to salvage the Alabama Senate seat as fresh polling shows Roy Moore's prospects are fading fast. You know, this reminds me of when I ran for Congress, when the Democrats all recommended that their Democratic members vote for the Republican opponent of Terrible Tommy. Yeah, they actually went so far as to tell the Democrats all to vote for the Republican because I was running. So this is the kind of stuff that goes on in politics. Very shallow and corrupt. With less than 4 weeks until the special election and no sign that the party's besieged nominee, besieged primarily by the press, will exit the race. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and his top advisors are discussing the legal feasibility of asking appointed Senator Luther Strange to resign from his seat in order to trigger a new special election. Boy, they're going apeshit. Those Republicans are the biggest cowards I ever saw. Biggest cowards I ever saw. Well, the Baltimore mayor, Baltimore, Maryland, is deeply, he says, I'm deeply disturbed. Yeah, because he's probably black. I don't know, but they're crying about Baltimore's crime. They got a crime wave, which actually is mostly nigger wave. And until they identify the cause and who's committing the most crime, you never can solve the crime.
Well, Mary, last week it was the police commissioner who was fired up at a press conference. Today it was Mayor Catherine Pugh responding to those who are lashing out at her over the violence. She says every time there is a shooting or a murder in this city, her phone rings and it couldn't be more disturbing.
Anybody who thinks that I don't take this seriously or that this is not something alarming to me.
Mayor Catherine Pugh fires back at critics questioning her leadership as Baltimore's closing in on one of its deadliest times ever.
I am deeply disturbed about the violence.
Hitting 300-plus murders for the third year in a row.
This is worse, man. This is worse, man, than Detroit in one way, and it's worse than Chicago.
Vicious, random attacks like Sebastian Dvorak, who was killed in Canton after a night out with friends. Takiya Martin's daughter, who was beat down at the Inner Harbor.
But they just don't understand the pain, the terror, and the hurt that they cause.
Violence that's keeping some in their homes.
I know a lot of people are scared to even come out the building.
And driving others away from the city.
I'm actually thinking about moving.
Many calling for a more obvious presence of police in their communities.
Unless you have more actively involved law enforcement, then I don't know how this is going to end.
The mayor acknowledging the city is battling a shortage of officers, but that close to 200 individuals have already made it through the hiring process.
I've said to the police department, fill every single vacancy that you have. We won't really feel the impact of that until probably next year.
For now, the mayor has ordered everyday meetings on crime involving most of the city's agencies, along with an influx of lights added throughout the city and a focal point of expanding the Safe Streets program. Many wonder what it will take for Baltimore to come out on top.
You can't just keep finger pointing. Everyone has to take some responsibility.
I hate to see this city go down.
We will continue this fight, and we will continue until we win it.
That was Rick Ritter reporting. Anybody with information on the Locust Point murder is asked to contact police.
There you go. Beautiful Baltimore with a black mayor. How about that? A black mayor. Surprise, surprise, a black woman mayor. Is there a mayor of a large city in this country that isn't black or Mexican or now Indians? What else? But there's always a crew of white, old white Jews and non-Jews in the back room running the show for the corporations. You got to understand that. These black mayors don't really call the shots. Chicago's a perfect example. Everybody knows that the crime is, the worst crime is committed by blacks, and usually against each other, but still blacks. And they want to hire more cops, more incompetent cops, to misapply the law. That's not going to change anything, Madam Mayor in Baltimore. You got to do like the old-time black cops did in South Central L.A. when back in the 40s and 50s. They took care of problems. They took care of their own people. They beat their head in if they didn't mind. Yeah. That's community policing. That's community policing. Come here, boy. You ain't going to do that no more. I'm going to kick your ass big time. Then I'll kick your head, too. Well, I see one of the oldest nigger leaders in the world has got a problem. Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe, who loves to kill white people, is confined to his home as the military seizes control. Too bad they don't put a bullet in his head. Meanwhile, soldiers are inside the state's broadcaster headquarters and have told employees not to be afraid, that we are here to protect you. And this reminds me of that old statement, knocking on the door, we're from the government, we're here to protect you. And to continue their work as usual, the journalist told ABC News. The journalist noted that Mugabe has had strained relations with the media. Oh, God. That guy's lived, what is he, 85, 88? So he's done pretty good for himself. Yeah, he's had a long run. Whites complain about him, and South Africans complain about him, but the whites all over the place complain about him, but none of them had the balls to put a bullet in his head. Why don't those farmers that are always getting screwed by the blacks and so forth, I've said before, you know, they could hire a hitman for something like that, but none of them had the forewithal or one to spend the money to do it. So you deserve what you get. You get what you deserve, man. That's it. So there's Mugabe. He's locked up in his house. Well, I see Charlie Manson's on the ropes. reportedly clinging to life in a California hospital. Charlie Manson was rushed out of prison to a California hospital where he's clinging to life, according to reports Wednesday night. The 83-year-old Manson normally makes his home inside the walls of Corcoran State Prison, but he was taken to Bakersfield Hospital earlier this week. Well, I have a sort of a, I never was much of a fan of Charlie Manson, like some of the guys who are actually right-wing racists, but I do believe he should have been on parole long ago, and just like Sirhan Sirhan. It's because of their notoriety that they keep him in there forever. So, looks like Charlie's not going to get out the easy way. Well, I have a nice letter here from one of our supporters, a creator, who's doing life for defending himself from a Negro. Dear Brother Tom, greetings and much respect to you, sir, as always. I received your latest mailing. Thank you for that. It was a bit depressing, however. Maybe we will yet either be martyrs or icons of the noble struggle. Even if nobody worthy remains to know, we will go out with our heads held high. Stiff arm salute to you, brother. And maybe it's is enough to know that we are different, and yes, perhaps better. Collectively, we are better than them. And it may be arrogant to say, but I think you and I are probably better than most of our own. We know things that they will never seek to know. We care about them more than they care about themselves. This is just the way it is. It is indisputable that I think differently than most inmates. It was obvious right from the beginning, of course. I'm just hearing and seeing more than I usually do. A guy just got done telling me that he would like to get a visit from his dad so his dad can bring him a watch. He doesn't give a fuck about his dad or his visits. The entire conversation just made me angry. I haven't had a visit in years. My mom and dad have died in recent years. I'd give a million watches to see them again. And why is $100 watch better than a $10 watch? I've always wondered about that myself. Maybe a gold chain or a new pair of Nikes. Are these people trying to look good for some infected fags? Guy had a cell phone, strictly illegal, rented it out. The guy who will rent it out to use to send the text messages to his ex-wife. The guy is in prison for kidnapping and terrorizing her. She has a protective order against him. So guess what? She called her local sheriff's office. The guards came, got the phone, and the caller is now getting additional charges. He was about to get out. Now that won't happen. None of this behavior made any sense to me at all. And so I said, and the guy was talking at all. And so I said, oh, here, and the guy was talking to thought it was okay. The guy I was talking to thought it was okay. Wanted to argue about it. He said, maybe the guy wanted to say he was sorry. Wanted to reconcile and so on. The idea that all of this is illegal and a slam dunk for the GPS and never enters the thoughts process here. And I can't get out because of the people like this. I'm describing, and they're not all black. They don't care. They like it here. I'm absolutely serious. And it's bad math, too. But you can't tell them anything. I say, okay, you hit a lick. Robbed a bank. Got $5,000. Wow. Really? That lasts how long? Do it again. Get caught. Get 20 years. A Guatemalan fruit picker is better off than that. And Pedro isn't in prison. I was at one point a facilitator for the transition program. It's like a lecture series for guys about to get out. There's questions in a workbook, group discussions. I told them there is a blueprint for success. Get a job, any job. Do exactly what they tell you to do. Do not violate any law. Pay your bills, pay your taxes, and so on. And you know what happens? Nothing. People that do these simple things stay out of prison. The rest are back in weeks. And here I am. I'm certain that I can do it. But there is no blueprint for me to earn my release. Well, that's because you killed a nigger. None. I filed an ethics complaint against each of the parole commissioners. The ethics commission says as long as hate is in their motive, is not illegal. As long as no money changes hands and they can suborn perjury and ignore their own rules. It's the working man who's caught in the middle between corrupt and morally bankrupt government and the insolent horde who refuse to work, have 10 children, litter after litter, to keep the checks keep coming in. Maybe it's too late. I still want to make a stop, and so do you. How by staying the course? Continuing to speak the truth. Rahoa. Well, gotta go. Thank you so much for everything, brother. Never give up. I'll help when I can. There was a good creator that worked under Ben Klassen who got caught in a situation in the parking lot of a supermarket. And he was in his car. This nigger came at him with a cement block and he blew his brains out. So he gets life. That's the way it goes, boys. Sorry, that's hard to read. This was printed material, a little difficult to read. But you get the point. Somebody down there in, where was it? Alabama, Louisiana? Forget now where he's at. No, I think he's in Florida. Someone down there should go visit him. We need guys to sign up to go visit racial prisoners because even the lowest rotten Negro gets visitors. They don't judge him all the time like white people do. You go to the prison, you see 2/3 or better, maybe 80% of the visitors are black or some other non-white race. They're not embarrassed by it. The whites, the minute a guy goes to prison, screw him. Forget him. Yeah, this fellow's at Indian Town, Florida. Somebody down there's not far from Indiantown ought to sign up and go visit him. He's a good man. I'm still waiting on my permission to go visit Richard Scutari. As soon as I get the paperwork, I'm going to go. But it seems like they're dragging their heels on this. They want to persecute Richard Scutari to the very end. He should have been out 20 years ago. When they say you're a hater, I say, yeah, they're by God right. There's a whole lot of people I hate. prison officials are on that list. Hate those sons of bitches. And the mean guards, too. Because I know what they get away with inside the prisons. Not that there aren't some decent guards, because we've had guards that were actually members of our association that gave guys a lot of breaks inside the prison. I've lost track of one of our female prison guards that really did a lot of good inside the prison. And there should be a lot more white guards like that to do their best to give guys a break that deserve it. If they don't deserve it, don't give them anything. Well, Mark Dice is an author who's analyzed this fake news situation. He did an interview on Coast to Coast last night. In the first half, the media analyst and author Mark Dice exposed the role of mainstream media plays in shaping our lives. He discusses the fake news phenomenon and the implications of mega corporations like Facebook, Google, and Twitter becoming the ultimate gatekeepers and distributors of news information. Dice said that fake news has been around for hundreds of years as propaganda, advertising, and hoaxes, for example. He believes the current panic is being led by mainstream news outlets that see independent news as a serious threat to their dominance, and not because the stories they uncover are necessarily false or untrue. This is despite the fact that social media drives a great deal of news into the mainstream, whether it's true or not, or is even particularly important. Dice recounted the story of Edward Bernays, Jew, father of public relations, who was hired by tobacco companies in 1929 to convince the public that it was socially acceptable for women to smoke and get cancer. He did this by tying the issue to women's rights, so-called rights. He quoted from Bernays, who wrote that we are dominated by a relatively small number of persons. It is they who pull the wires that control the public mind. Bernays was also hired by the U.S. government to sway public opinion about World War I. I've told you about this before. Dice also discussed the history of the CIA's involvement with media manipulation through a project known as Operation Mockingbird, which operates both at home and abroad. He informed the listeners that Facebook now accounts for over half of the traffic on the internet, and that along with Google and YouTube have been active manipulating the public's perception for many years. So there you go. Let me see if I can find some of that show.
A gunman whose Tuesday's Arabian regional nemesis Iran are even higher than usual, with Riyadh targeting Tehran's ally Hezbollah. If an actual military conflict between the two breaks out, who would have the best chance of prevailing? And what would that do to destabilizing the Middle East? Dr. John Curtis, OnlineColumnist.com, with us. John, this could be a mess. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, you know, Saudi Arabia is in a like coup mode right now. They're having a coup d'etat. The son of the of King Salman, Mohammed,
he's gone wild.
Bin Salman is like incarcerating all of his cousins and, you know, billionaires, and, you know, he's not looking at anything. He says it's an anti-corruption thing, but it's really a coup d'etat, and they're in no position. They're fighting a war in Yemen right now that's become like a Vietnam for them. They can't get out of it. And only 2 weeks ago, an Iranian missile fired by the Houthi rebels in Yemen almost hit the Riyadh airport. So, you know, their foreign minister, Abdel Jubeir, has just said that that was an act of war. But Iran, I mean, Saudi Arabia right now, the current defense minister is MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, the 32-year-old who's like, you know, incarcerating everybody. So he's in no position right now to be fighting any kind of a war with Iran. So I think that's largely smoke. I think, you know, you've got a problem with, you know, the consequence of the Iraq war, whether anybody really understands we know there was massive chaos. We know that there was anarchy all over the Middle East for years. But the real consequence of it, George, is that Iran essentially controls Iraq right now.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
That Lebanon is controlled by Iran's surrogate sort of, you know, militia, I mean, terrorist group called Hezbollah. And they have recently become so aggressive that it forced the prime minister, Saeed Harari, to flee to Riyadh. And that's where he is right now under protective custody. And Nasrallah is? Nasrallah is the head of Hezbollah. And he said that Harari is actually under house arrest.
Right. There's this conflict there, whether he's being detained on his, you know, by the Saudis or whether he's hiding there.
No, he's sought refuge there because Hezbollah threatened his life. So I think on the Iran Saudi war front, that's not going to happen. But I think that, you know, Donald Trump, our president, you know, completely backs MBS in his takeover of Saudi Arabia. So we'll have to wait and see what happens.
All right, John.
Well, you want to know who's going to win in that struggle? The country that's got the most U.S. manufactured weapons and the best U.S. manufactured weapons and European weapons. That's how it goes. So probably we've given Saudi Arabia sold Saudi Arabia massive amounts of weapons, probably more than those other countries. So, you know, we're responsible for most of this shit. I know these guys like to fight each other, but if they've got super weapons that we give them or sell them, trade them or whatever, they're going to fight more and they're going to kill more. So don't act innocent, Washington. It's all part of the scum from Washington.
You'll hear about it now. In a moment, Mark Dice joins us. His latest work, The True Story of Fake News, he's next on Coast to Coast AM. Mark Dice with us for the next couple hours. His latest work, The True Story of Fake News. The rest of the title is important. How Mainstream Media Manipulates Millions. Now, Mark is an author, media analyst. He specializes in exposing secret societies and the power of mainstream media and celebrities have on shaping our culture and our lives. His YouTube channel has received more than 100 million views. He's been featured on a variety of television shows like Our Ancient Aliens, Conspiracy Theory with the Jesse Ventura, and Secret Societies of Hollywood. Mark, welcome back. It's always good to have you on the show.
Always good to be with you. It certainly is a strange, exciting, and sometimes scary time to be alive.
Oh, my gosh.
Tonight's topic is certainly fitting for our current climate in the country.
We're going to look at some past historical events of fake news, but give us the perspective, Mark, of the definition of what fake news is.
You know, fake news, it has been around for hundreds of years. We'll get into some of the earlier examples. It was called different things. It was called propaganda, called a hoax, called even conspiracy theories. But as we all unfortunately know now, immediately after the 2016 election, the term was sort of coined and propelled to the consciousness of everybody in the country, and it sort of took on a whole new meaning as really an example of the ultimate goal, I think, of this whole hysteria. Not to say that there isn't a problem with fake news now that we're all connected through Facebook and social media, mm-hmm. and anybody can post anything and can have it go viral and be seen and heard by just as many people as something on the network news. But we'll see, we can get into it later in the show, that this is really kind of a disguise in order to kind of clamp down on the rising independent alternative media to try to drive people back to the mainstream. And we'll see that most of the fake news really isn't coming from some random websites or the Russians. It is coming from the mainstream media.
It's planned out as well, isn't it? This is not just a fluke or an accident. I've seen two different kinds of fake news, Mark. One is very deliberate, planned, methodical releases of stories. We'll get into that. And then I've seen things where people are just playing around having fun. They've killed off a celebrity. It goes all over the place. I mean, even I almost got duped one day when I looked, and I'm not even going to mention the name of the celebrity. I don't want to kill the poor guy off again. But he pops up on the website, and he's dead. And I go, oh, my God, I haven't heard anything about this. And then you check, and it's not real.
Right after the election, they compiled a list of maybe the top 10 or so viral fake news stories. And, I mean, 8 out of 10 of them weren't even really fake news. They were more or less satire or parody. And perhaps the title caught people's attention, and people read maybe the first paragraph of the article. And they didn't get to the meat of it where it really starts to just go off into left field. And it should be obvious to anyone that it's something like The Onion or a satire making fun of something. And these were examples. I mean, 60 Minutes did an investigation into fake news. And one of the examples that they showed was a story about how Trump got a colonoscopy and the doctor discovered a brain tumor. I mean, it's obvious what that joke is. He's got his head up his rear.
Ding, ding.
Brain tumor. I mean, but this is one of the examples. Another one was somebody at a hotel, a maid, walked in with Trump, and he was, you know, he was doing drugs, and he had some hookers there. And then it gets into a really quite hilarious where she saw a dog on the floor, but she thought it was his hair. And it isn't fake news. It's a parody. It's satire, clickbait. You know, some of these fake news stories during the election did get shared by some people in the campaign. Corey Lewandowski, the one-time campaign manager, retweeted a fake news story from a website that was designed to look like an ABC or an NBC news website. They had a different extension instead of the .com, which obviously is taken. It was, you know, .com.de. It was a hoaxing website. But the amount of fake news that was spread is in no way comparable to what people actually believe.
Well, I was going to ask you that. Why are they so gullible?
It's not that people even believe it. Just because somebody clicks on something that someone shares on Facebook doesn't mean that they actually believe it. It's a clickbait title out of curiosity. Someone clicks on it. Most people know that it's fake. You can see one of the top thumbed up comments in people's Facebook posts that says this is clearly fake. So just because people were clicking on these viral stories, just because they went viral, doesn't mean that anybody actually believed them. And there have been studies by different universities, different independent research firms that have found that most people didn't believe the fake news.
Well, that's good. But I would guess, based on demographics, more younger people would be more apt to believe these stories than older people. What do you think?
Yeah, because they don't have the life experience. They obviously haven't been around the globe that many times, so they don't have the worldly knowledge and the historical base. So that they're in this online world, this 15-second news cycle where they click and retweet something before they even really read through it. They want to share it, and then somebody else shares it. The viral ability of these things, but the actual effects of this fake news, most of which was parody, satire. There were some opportunists that were putting out fake news, hoping not necessarily to influence the election, but to just make a buck off of advertising by driving people to their websites.
Good point. Now, isn't this, would you call fake news, some of it, dangerous?
Well, some of it is, and particularly in the ecosystems of social media, because stories, tweets become news. Tweets from random unknown users that have been unconfirmed can go viral, can cause issues to start trending, can cause a frenzy. You know, we've seen multiple times where actually parody Twitter accounts online have tweeted out parodies from, let's say, the government of North Korea. And these have been picked up by newspapers like USA Today and the New York Times. They just don't fact check these things. Every time there's a mass shooting, these trolls, it's an inside joke to them. They'll tweet out photos of this individual and say that the shooter has been identified as Sam Hyde. And people believe this.
Mm-hmm.
They start spreading it around. And so, I mean, it is a problem, but it's not the problem that the mainstream media is framing it, because they have the power. And now Facebook, Twitter, I mean, they are media companies, social media, it's right in the name. But these companies drive a lot of news into the mainstream, into television, into print, based off of what's trending. And sometimes, as we can maybe get into later, those trending lists aren't exactly organic. It's not necessarily what everybody is tweeting about or posting about. There's some artificial inflation and suppression in those trending modules. So you can't even really believe what's trending as being something that's one of the top stories people are talking about, because Facebook employees have blown the whistle that they manipulate the top trending list and they were suppressing certain stories and certain news outlets. Twitter, their chief legal counsel actually just admitted in his testimony to the congressional committee investigating the Russia, you know, alleged collaboration, that they suppressed tweets, up to 50% of them, when John Podesta's emails were leaked, when the DNC emails were leaked. So they were suppressing 50% of those tweets, trying to prevent those stories from going viral. So there's a whole censorship issue. We're in a really strange Orwellian world. It's a new media world. It's no longer just a few television stations and a couple newspapers. It's a very strange media landscape that we're in, and that's why it's important that people become media literate so that they don't get swept away in some massive wave of disinformation.
Back in the late 30s and 40s, Nazi Germany, Hitler had a minister of propaganda, Joseph Goebbels, and that was his job. Everything was propaganda.
You know, a lot of times if people don't know any better and they see something, they hear something, they tend to believe it. The historic example, I know that you're familiar with this, being in the radio industry, but back in the 1930s when H.G. Wells broadcast War of the Worlds on his mystery theater radio show, you know, about the fictional
Orson Welles
coming down, and a lot of people back then, just flipping through the dial, they thought it was a news broadcast.
They panicked.
They were calling the police. They, you know, some of the panic may be a little bit overblown. I don't know if people were, you know, hundreds or thousands of people just left their homes and hit the streets and packed up their car, but people freaked out because it sounded like a newscast. This was the 1930s. You know, I mean, let's face it, you know, alien invasion, I mean, it's not outside of the realm of possibilities. And that just goes to show, when people hear something that sounds believable, they don't have any alternative information, they may tend to believe it. And that is a case example in, you know, radio and television history classes in college.
Oh, my God. Hold on, Mark. Let's start talking about Nazi Germany and how amazingly good they were at propaganda during that time period.
And propaganda isn't just something that Nazi Germany or North Korea does. I mean, the United States does it too. And the CIA actually works with Hollywood studios to put out movies about war, and they're designed as propaganda. The CIA, or the even other departments within the military, the Air Force, they lend equipment to Hollywood studios to use in movies. You can't just go and rent an aircraft carrier or equipment that they're using, some of these jets and weapons. And so the Department of Defense is working with Hollywood studios to put out films, very popular films that we've all seen, that are propaganda, and this convinces people of things. I mean, propaganda is so powerful that back in the 20s, it was taboo for women to smoke. It was something that only men did. And so this kind of evil genius, Edward Bernays, this founder really of
public relations,
father of public relations, he was hired by a tobacco company to convince people that women should smoke. And so what he did is he had a bunch of models march in the Easter Parade in New York in 1929, all smoking. And then he sent out a press release to all the newspapers and said that they were doing this as part of the women's rights movement. They have the right to smoke, and that these weren't cigarettes. These were torches of freedom. And he is responsible for breaking that taboo. This is the same guy, really, that actually is the reason why when we propose marriage, we go and buy a diamond, or most of us buy a diamond, and you see all the Christmas is coming up, you see all the diamond commercials. Before that, wedding rings were just a gold band.
Yeah.
But he was hired by the diamond companies, like De Beers, really the monopoly, to convince people that, you know, if you want to propose to your girlfriend, it has to be a diamond or you don't really love her. That's the power of propaganda.
Was the Gulf of Tonkin incident propaganda and fake news to get us involved with Vietnam?
Oh, absolutely. We have multiple instances going back throughout history to get us into war. It's been declassified. The tapes have come out. They staged the whole thing. It was 100% fake news. I mean, we can go way, way back to the Spanish-American War back in the 1890s.
What was fake about that? What happened?
Well, there was a ship that blew up due to what everyone believes was mechanical failure, the USS Maine. And so the big newspapers in New York back then, the New York Journal, which is owned by William Randolph Hearst, and the New York World, which is owned by Joseph Pulitzer, they started hyping up that the ship was blown up, that this was an attack from the Spanish, from Cuba, and they're hyping up this incident, this alleged attack, which most historians believe was a mechanical failure or an accident or someone smoking near some munitions that caused the ship to explode. That is largely what historians say led to, was the straw that broke the camel's back, that led to the Spanish-American War. I mean, we can even go back further, really, if you want. I mean, back to the beginning of this country, you know, Benjamin Franklin actually put out some fake news to gain sympathy for the colonies here towards the end of the Revolutionary War. He printed a fake article. He had a printing press, which was very rare in those days, as you can imagine. It's not like we have a printer here, and you can go down to the Kinko's and print up some copies and staple them onto telephone poles. He made a fake story about how Indians allegedly scalped 700 colony members, and that they were working with the British, and that they were working for King George, and so they spread this story around to, you know, get sympathy for us. And I mean, you might say, well, is his justification right? I mean, that's some murky waters right there. But this is how fake news works. Propaganda like that has been around. I mean, this was 250 years ago that they were spreading fake news, and we've seen, you know, the modern incarnations of it, you know, through mainstream media. I mean, even going back to the Gulf War, really. I mean, you probably recall this tearful girl in front of
Wag the Dog, right?
Well, this tearful girl in front of Congress crying about how Iraqi soldiers came into the hospital
and killed babies.
They tipped over the incubators with the babies in them, and she didn't work at the hospital. She was actually the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador, and that really was a fake story. I mean, it was, and that was used. I mean, this is what President Bush, you know, George Bush Sr. used as one of his primary talking points to get us into this war.
Well, what about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq?
Another one, absolutely.
I mean, even President Bush admits they weren't there.
It was astounding. And to see the mainstream media go along with this, what's interesting is even your what's perceived to be your kind of, you know, liberal anti-war people, they all kind of went along with it, except for Phil Donahue. He had a show on MSNBC. It was actually the highest rated show on the network, and he was adamantly against the war before it happened during the buildup. MSNBC canceled his show, and they said, well, it was due to low ratings. Well, it was the highest rated show on the network. And what they did is they spun it, and they said, well, it just wasn't high enough. They wanted better ratings, so they got rid of him.
They get rid of all the other shows, too, right?
Yeah, he was the number one show. You don't get rid of your number one show and say, well, we expected the show to do better. Well, that's incredible. Why would you do that?
See, now,
it's so such a murky field to get into and to navigate through, and it's, you know, we see it changing recently with the world of social media and YouTube and all these places, but the core principles are there. But part of this, really most of this fake news scare is because the mainstream establishment, which is, you know, kind of this invisible empire, a small collaborative group of just a few different companies, they're losing control of their ability. I mean, George, when I can make a YouTube video in my kitchen and it can get a million views.
I know, it's remarkable. It really is.
There's no barrier to entry. I don't have to go to a studio. I'm using a laptop. I mean, the cost of the technology has gotten so low, and so the mainstream establishment, they're panicking. They don't know what to do. They're trying to, you know, point to independent outlets and say, well, they're the fake news outlets. We are the most trusted one. But in that same time, their ethical standards have sunk so far into the toilet that they've largely resorted to clickbait, trolling, sensationalist headlines, trying to just get clicks and trying to go viral in a desperate attempt to try to prevent their audience from fleeing.
See, I think, Mark, the major three networks, CBS, NBC, and ABC, that they should take their news organizations and merge them with the cable companies, because by the time the evening news comes on, it's old news. We would have seen these stories all day long. There's nothing new anymore. In the old days, that was it. Those were the only major newscasts on a national basis you could get. Not anymore. Now, with Twitter and, everything coming across Facebook and the little alerts that come with your apps of CNN and Fox News and the Drudge Report, the network newscasts, when they come on at 5:30, 6, 6:30 in whatever city you're in, it's old news.
It is old news, but not everybody can, you know, maintain an awareness throughout the day. Not everybody has their cell phone with them.
Well, but you're talking about a lot of people that can do that.
Well, they're panicking because before the election cycle, which brings in a huge influx of viewers because everybody wants to pay attention and find out, you know, what's going on and what's candidates doing what and who said what and what scandals next. I mean, before this election cycle started, which was, you know, really kind of the end of 2015. I mean, back in like 2014, these cable networks, I mean, Fox was doing pretty good, but I mean, MSNBC, they could barely get a 250,000 viewers. I mean, my YouTube videos get that, you know, and so they're panicking because it's so fractionalized. I mean, George, there's over 2,000 YouTube channels with 1 million subscribers. Now, obviously, those aren't all news channels. It's a lot of entertainment and video games and, but you have cooking shows and news and commentary and entertainment, and it's a very strange time, which is why it's important that we monitor this dramatic change that's happening in the media world so that we don't just get disconnected from reality, as it appears that it's sort of like this race to the bottom now where people are just throwing ethics aside. Some of the major news networks to...
Well, that's enough of that, but I'll tell you it's quite interesting. And what I'm thinking of doing, instead of trying to take up most of the show with another show, is to send this information out separately in an MP3 file. In other words, send the show out and then research around the web and find something good. And if I think it has any bearing on what we're into, I'll send that to you separately. I'm going to send this one out to you separately. It's it's about, what, an hour or so, and I'll send that out to you separately. So, and maybe tomorrow we'll do it again. If you think that's a decent thing to do or helps you out in your research on what's going on, I'll do it, because there's no way that we can... You can cover everything, or your neighbor can cover everything, or even I can cover everything, but I try to get to the bottom in the race thing and the governmental fraud and all that kind of stuff. But for me to do a lot of this stuff, it takes a lot of time, and I need to get your donations in for the show. Some of you are a little slow, and some of you have a good excuse, but if you let me know, but... Let's get those donations in and get them in early in the month if you can. And always make sure to put your email address on the inside of the envelope someplace.
warrior who protects his people from monstrous giants. He was the idol of Vikings and barbarians in the darkest age ever known to man. But few know the reality behind his myth. He battled the ancient world's most colossal sea monster. And he was the last hope for Europe's pagans as they defied the armies of Christendom. Fact and fiction collide in the myth of the mighty Thor. Two arch enemies battle to the death. Thor, the thunder god, against a staggering beast. A giant snake who strikes with lethal force. It is man versus monster. Thor unleashes his deadliest weapon, lightning from his magic hammer, as thunder rocks heaven and earth. The myth of Thor is filled with these epic showdowns, heroic battles against creatures who threaten mankind.
Thor is the champion of the gods. He's the great fighter who can be brought out when something is really bad. You don't go to Thor for wisdom. Go to Thor because he's going to protect you against the evil monsters.
Tales of Thor's adventures provided escape from one of the bleakest periods in human history, the Dark Ages of the first millennium AD. It was a time when the Norse world, stretching from the British Isles to the Baltic Sea, was in turmoil.
It's an agricultural society where people were farming and surviving kind of at the very edge of how it was possible to survive because it was cold. It was the northern part of Europe. It wasn't around the Mediterranean where it was much easier to grow things. And it tended to be, from everything we can tell, quite violent.
War, famine, and death were daily facts of life on the desolate northern fringes of Europe. But the myth of Thor brought a sense of order to the chaos.
It was a religion of the countryside. Paganism actually is a Latin word that describes that, what the country people believe in. And paganism is not really well organized either. It's not like the Greek pantheon in the sense that it's very well organized and everybody knows whose responsibilities and who's more important than whom. It's very different.
The view of human life in that mythology was a fairly dark, a fairly stern one. Human beings didn't look forward to the kind of salvation in heaven at the end of time that's promised in the Christian stories. They had a kind of a darker, a more sorrowful view of life. People have to show great courage and hardiness in the face of enormous obstacles.
For inspiration, the people looked to Thor.